It seems I hear Harry Moore from the earth, his voice still cries. No bomb can kill the dreams I hold, for freedom never dies.
On Christmas night 1951, a bomb exploded under the home of educator and activist Harry T. Moore. The home was in Mims, Florida, just north of Titusville and east of Orlando. Both Moore and his wife Harriet died from injuries sustained in the blast. The book Before His Time, The Untold Story of Harry T. Moore, America's First Civil Rights Martyr, is being published in a new edition with updated material. Ben Green is author of this comprehensive biography.
Harry Moore grew up in a little place called Houston, outside of Live Oak, which is just really a hole in the wall. I mean, there's just nothing there, no stop sign, traffic light. His father died when he was young. His father worked on the railroads, taking care of the big water tanks for the steam engines. And his mother worked in the cotton fields, and then she had a little store, basically just a little shack where she sold candy and soda pops and goods like that.
After the death of Harry's father, the young boy was sent to live with three aunts in Jacksonville, Florida. All three were well-educated, professional women.
I think that was the other part, that he got out of the country, and not just living with these three women who were talking politics and literature and world events, but the black community in Jacksonville was vibrant and alive with culture and black-owned businesses. So I really think it really just opened up the world to him.
Harry T. Moore left Jacksonville to become a teacher. He made his way to Brevard County in 1925 to teach at the Cocoa Colored School and was later promoted to principal of the Titusville Negro School.
One of the things that I don't think many people realize is even as late as the 1930s, only half of the counties in Florida had a black high school. So if you wanted to go to beyond elementary school to school, often you had to go out of town, you had to go away. So Harry left Jacksonville and actually went back to Live Oak and went to Florida Memorial College, which was located there. It was a college, but also had a high school program. So he graduated in 1925 with a normal degree, basically a teaching certificate, and got a job in Cocoa, teaching in Brevard County.
Soon after arriving in Brevard County, Harry T. Moore met his soulmate, Harriet Vida Sims. The couple was married on Christmas Day, 1926.
Well, I think it's an interesting thing. They were both very sort of sober, serious people. They met at a card party, at a whist party. And she was an older woman. She was like 2 years older than he was. But obviously, they hit it off. He used to tell his daughters it was love at first sight. And so very quickly, they got married. And her parents sort of gave them a piece of land on their property in this grove, and they built a house and started a family.
Education was important in the Moore household. The entire family, Harry, Harriet, and daughters Peaches and Evangeline, would all graduate from Bethune-Cookman College in Daytona. Harry T. Moore's civil rights activities, including an effort to equalize pay for black and white teachers, would lead to him being forced to resign from the Brevard County school system. Ben Green.
I think he started his activism with what he knew best, which was education. And so through his involvement with the Florida State Teachers Association, which was the black teacher organization, he filed the first lawsuit in the Deep South to equalize black and white teacher salaries. Black teachers, black principals made basically half what their white counterparts did. That was also the first time that he interacted with Thurgood Marshall. Thurgood Marshall had filed the first lawsuit in the country to equalize black and white teacher salaries. But that was in Maryland, border state, and Thurgood was working for the NAACP already. So Harry Moore wrote him a letter and said, we want to move on this in Florida. And it was the first, I think, of many interactions that they had.
After losing his teaching job, Harry T. Moore had more time to dedicate to his civil rights activities. He founded the Brevard County branch of the NAACP and created the Progressive Voters League.
There were three big things that he worked on. One was teacher salaries, the other would be voter registration, and then the third would be lynchings. But really, this is another juncture where he and Thurgood Marshall came together. In 1941, Thurgood Marshall won the Supreme Court decision, Smith v. Allwright, that outlawed the white primary, which was the only election that mattered in the Deep South. Harry Moore immediately organized the Progressive Voters League in Florida and started registering black Floridians in the Democratic Party.
After forming the Brevard County branch of the NAACP, Moore became active with the organization on the state level. The relationship between Moore and the national office was sometimes contentious. Ben Green, author of Before His Time.
This is one of the most surprising things I found when I started doing this book. I thought I was writing a book about an NAACP hero, and I found out that actually there was tremendous tension, conflict between Moore and the national office in New York. I think there were two things. One is his political activism. The NAACP was supposed to be nonpartisan, and Harry T. Moore understood that if you're not registered in the Democratic Party in Florida, it does no good. And so he started pushing to register and eventually registered over 100,000 blacks in the Democratic Party. At the same time, most of the black leadership in the NAACP were Republicans because that was the only party they could be part of, and they'd sort of get crumbs thrown their way. And so he got some resentment from black leaders in Florida, particularly in big cities, because he was a small town guy. But then more so, I think the national office didn't like it because he became a paid executive secretary, and all the money he was raising to pay his own salary could have gone to New York.
After Harry T. Moore was killed, the NAACP was quick to claim him as one of their own, even though he had been fired.
Yeah, it was really one of the most tragic parts of this, and actually the thing more than anything that angered Evangeline Moore is when she found out when my book came out that they went out of their way to, they actually fired him before he was killed. And then as soon as he was killed, I described it as they became a cottage industry of raising money off Harry T. Moore and had fundraisers all around the country and in New York and Madison Square Garden, raising money for the NAACP based on his murder.
The murders of Harry T. and Harriet V. Moore have never been solved. It's possible that it was Moore's activities registering African Americans to vote that led to a bomb being placed under his home. Others believe it was his involvement in the infamous Groveland rape trial that inspired this act of domestic terrorism.
I think it was a political assassination. I don't think it was just some old racist Klansman said, let's take out that uppity so-and-so. I think it was because he had registered 100,000 black voters in the Democratic Party. The night of his death at Christmas dinner at his mother-in-law's house in the Grove, one of the last conversations he had with his best friend from Cocoa was about how the black vote was going to determine the outcome of the 1952 governor's race. And he was going around the state saying the black vote will determine the outcome of every election in Florida. And I think that's why he was killed. I think he was killed to try to suppress black election power. And it worked. Black voter registration plummeted after his death. It took another 10 or 15 years till the civil rights movement to get it back to where it was. So I think it was a political assassination more than just a individual hate crime.
In 1949, Harry T. Moore was actively involved in seeking justice for four young black men accused of raping a white woman in Groveland. One of the accused was killed by law enforcement before he could be arrested. The other three men were tortured during questioning and had evidence manufactured against them by the notoriously racist sheriff Willis McCall. The Supreme Court overturned the original convictions and a new trial was scheduled. Ben Green.
The day of a hearing for the new trial, Willis McCall and his deputy went to Rayford to pick him up. On the way back to Lake County, claimed that the two prisoners jumped him and attacked him, and he shot him. He emptied his revolver into him. He killed Sam Shepard, mortally, seriously, critically wounded Walter Irvin, who did survive, and told a completely different story, which is that McCall just yanked him out and started shooting. At that point, Harry T. Moore started calling for McCall to be removed from office, indicted for murder. He's telegramming and writing letters to the governor, to the U.S. attorney, to Thurgood Marshall, to the FBI, and then just 6 weeks later, he was blown up in his house. So the morning after the bombing in MIMS, people immediately connected the Groveland case to the Moore bombing. And when the FBI agents and the local deputies worked their way through the crowd that had gathered and said, why would anyone have wanted to kill Harry Moore? Everybody immediately said, Groveland.
Harry T. and Harriet V. Moore were killed 12 years before Medgar Evers, 14 years before Malcolm X, and 17 years before Martin Luther King Jr., but their legacy has been often overlooked.
In a way, I think they're like multiple tragedies. One is they were killed, and the murders have never been solved. And then, in some ways, it's almost equally tragic they were forgotten. I feel like the most poignant epitaph, really, is he was killed 3 years too early. If he had been killed in 1954, after the Brown decision, he would be Medgar Evers. He was Medgar Evers. He just did it before anybody was paying attention. He would have been in every history book. Everybody would have known his name. But it was 1951. There was no civil rights movement. There were no TV cameras filming the dogs attacking children in Birmingham. The murders were not solved. It was really just forgotten about.
In recent years, Harry T. and Harriet V. Moore have been getting some of the recognition they deserve. An exhibit about the Moores is on display at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. The Harry T. and Harriet V. Moore Cultural Complex, built on the Moore family homestead in MIMS, Florida, has a civil rights museum, a reflecting pool, and a replica of the Moore family home.
It's been slow and gradual. There have been other contributions, the documentary film that PBS did. There's a song, you know, The Ballad of Harry T. Moore. You can find that on YouTube, Sweet Honey in the Rock. But I bet you if you went to Brevard County and took a poll, I bet still the majority of the people there don't even know who he is. I mean, the courthouse is named after him. There's the cultural center. I think they still, in a way, are fighting a losing battle against the tourist industry in Florida and the fact that how many people who moved here just came here in the last 4, 5, 10 years. I didn't say this, but I think it's valid. He was our Martin Luther King. He was Florida's Martin Luther King, and yet I still think the majority of Floridians don't know who he is, not to mention probably 95% of, at least, of Americans have no idea who he is.
Ben Green is author of the book Before His Time, The Untold Story of Harry T. Moore, America's First Civil Rights Martyr. A new edition of the book with updated material is being published by the Florida Historical Society Press.
And this, he says, our Harry Moore has from the grave he cries. No bomb can kill the dreams I hold, for freedom never dies. Freedom never dies, I say. Freedom never dies. No bomb can kill the dreams I hold, for freedom never.